This is KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna, listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara, and this is the Kenai Conversation. On today's episode of the Kenai Conversation, we're joined by our very own Hunter Morrison for what I am reluctantly calling a farewell episode. Hunter, thank you so much for, you know, joining us here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I guess, you know, first off, I mean, what's it like sitting on that side of the studio desk? I feel like usually you're on this side asking the questions.
It's a little weird. I'm used to interviewing people, but when people interview me, it's always interesting. I'm a little nervous, I guess. A little nervous.
I am too, if that makes you feel better. So, you know, I mentioned farewell episode. Can you tell us a little bit about why we're saying farewell to you at this moment in time?
Yeah, so I accepted a news reporting job at KRBD. They're the public radio station down in Ketchikan. So I'll be moving down there next month.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And tell us a little bit about how that position came about. I guess, why were you looking for a new gig? What were the circumstances around that?
Yeah, so, you know, we've, here at KDLL, we're, you know, having some issues with funding in regards to the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. And, I kind of just applied for it out of necessity because I wasn't entirely sure of, you know, if my position here was going to be, you know, funded anymore. That kind of caused me to look elsewhere. And also, like, you know, I was kind of at that point, I was ready for a change. You know, as much as I do like the area, I'm kind of curious to see what else is out there. And I've heard that, you know, Southeast Alaska is a complete different beast than here, South Central. So that sort of led me to apply. And then I honestly wasn't sure about their funding situation either, because they're, you know, in the same boat with the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. So I think I applied for it back in May and didn't hear until July back from them, and did the interview. And I'm not going to lie, the interview did not go great.
Why do you say that?
Well, I'm like terrible at job interviews. Like I mentioned, I enjoy interviewing people, but when I'm on the other side of that, like on that chair, it's just, I don't know. I've never been great with job interviews.
I mean, clearly you did something right, though.
I guess I did something right. And then also, like, kind of funny, during the job interview, my landlord, like, I was at the house doing this. My landlord, like, came over, and I saw him pull up in my driveway, and I was thinking to myself, please don't knock on the door. Please don't come inside. And so he knocks on the door once, and I pretend not to hear it. And then he knocks again, and I'm like, I had to pause the interview, and I'm like, guys, I am so sorry. My landlord is at my door right now to drop off a vacuum cleaner for reason. Mm-hmm. But anyway, back to your question. So kind of the funding situation made me interested in applying just to, so I can have, you know, sort of that job security. Again, I wasn't sure about their funding situation, but they're kind of an interesting situation down there, where they received an emergency grant from Report for America, which is sort of like, for those who don't know, it's like an organization that sort of funds news reporters in like more rural news organizations around the country. And so they received an emergency grant to fund this position for up to 3 years, which is kind of unusual for them to issue an emergency grant, but the circumstances were, you know, a bit unusual in terms of their funding situation. So as a result, they were able to, you know, hire someone for that position. And within like a day or two, they reached out to me and offered me the job. And I only had a couple of days to decide because it was an emergency grant, so they had to like have someone lined up right away.
Mm-hmm. So. Are you, I guess by accepting the position, are you committing to all 3 years?
So it's not like here. So here at KDL, I don't know how it is for your position, but my position, it's year by year, like a yearly contract. So there's no contract down there. So I could stay for 6 months. I could stay for the entire 3 years if I'd like. The way that the position is funded is, the first year, it's totally funded by Report for America. They're 100% funding the first year with salary and benefits and all that. And then year two, I think that drops down to 50%. And then the station has to match the other 50%. And then I think year three, it's 25%. So at the very least, I'll be down there for a year, but I'm hoping to maybe get 2 years out of Southeast.
Mm-hmm. So. Well, and I do want to talk more about your new position, but mm-hmm. to start, I'd like to hit, you know, rewind for a minute and go back to when you were first thinking about coming to Alaska, because it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that this is your first full-time journalism job. And I would love to hear more and revisit. I know you've talked about this before, but how you ended up at KDLL in the first place.
Yeah. So yeah, this is my first position out of college. You know, I graduated back in 22 and then kind of took the rest of that year off to kind of lay low and relax and travel. But 2023 came around and, you know, I was at a point in my life where I was kind of ready to see what else was out there. I grew up in Florida. I lived there, you know, most of my life, and I was just kind of over it at that point. So I just sort of applied to jobs all over the country. I think I applied to like at least 40 jobs and threw in a couple of applications for Kicks in Alaska. I actually first applied for a position at KBBI, and then they referred me to an opening at KDLL, so I applied up here too. And like a week later, I heard back from the general manager asking to, you know, do an interview over Zoom. And, you know, the interview went fine, but I wasn't really expecting much of it because it just felt like, you know, so far away, you know, Alaska, like what do they want with a Florida boy?
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they offered me the job, and I'm like, well, you know, I guess I'm moving to Alaska. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I did not expect to move out here, but you know, it's been a great experience.
What were the reactions of your friends and family? Because Florida, I can't think of a place that's further away and still in the United States.
Well, my mom thinks I'm crazy, and my dad thinks it's the coolest thing in the world. He was like ecstatic, over the moon when I told him like I'm moving to Alaska.
Because he has Kenai roots too,
yeah,
right?
He does. It's like super interesting, and I didn't even put the pieces together until like after. I interviewed for this job that, you know, my dad used to live in Kenai. His dad was in the Air Force, and there used to be a military base here in Kenai, which is now where the correctional complex is, Wildwood. And yeah, he was stationed here for 4 years, and they moved up here in the mid-60s when my dad was like a year old or something like that. And so some of my dad's earliest memories are here in Kenai. And then, you know, when I told him that I interviewed for this job in Kenai, Alaska, he's like, you know, I used to live there, right? And so when I was offered the job, I almost took that as sort of an omen to come up here, like a kind of a weird full circle thing. And, you know, it's interesting. The building that my grandfather used to work in is still there at Wildwood. And it's like a mile from our office here. So that's also like just kind of a really full circle moment. But yeah, just like out of college, just applied to jobs all over and didn't think I'd end up here, but here I am.
And, you know, during your interview process, I guess, how was Alaska, or I guess your position here, how was that pitched to you when you got up here? What did you think you were going to be doing for KDLL?
You know, I honestly just, I wasn't entirely sure what the news reporting dynamic would look like what stories I would be covering. When I worked, before I moved up here, I worked like as a freelancer for a public radio station down in Florida. And oftentimes I was like given story assignments by an editor, like you are going to do this story, you're going to do that story. And I was kind of expecting the same thing when I moved up here, like to be given assignments, but,
I feel like that is not our newsroom dynamic up here.
No, there is so much freedom, which kind of took me by surprise. Like when I first moved up here and when I first started, I think my first week or two, I was like pitching story ideas to our general manager, Jenny, like, hey, can I do this story? You know, is this story okay? And at a certain point, she's like, you don't have to ask me anymore. Like you can, as long as you're, you know, producing quality content, that's all that really matters. So yeah, I wasn't really sure what to expect coming up here, but, and also the hosting thing, that was something I had to get used to because I had never done that before. And it was a little nerve wracking at first, but like once you get used to it, it's like nothing.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember what some of those like first stories that you had pitched were? Or I guess, do you remember the first story that you did for KDLL?
I think the very first story, the very first story that I did for KDLL was just kind of a simple one. The Kenai Art Center was like switching hands. Their news executive director was stepping down, and they had another one coming in. And I remember that interview super well too. Like I came into the art center and, shout out to Marian Nelson. She happened to come into this, like, into the art center in the middle of the interview. And, so I'm sitting there interviewing, both Alex and Charlotte, and Marian, I can't remember exactly what she was doing. I think she was like moving things around in the back. So there was like a lot of like squeaking noises and like,
not good for radio.
And I think Alex could see this look on my face. Like I didn't want to say anything, but he could tell it was kind of bothering me. And so he like stopped the interview and asked Marian, hey, would you mind holding off for 5 minutes? And she's like, oh, sure. And then about 2 minutes later, she continues it.
Sure.
But anyway, back to your question. Yeah, that was my first story, just kind of what the art center was up to.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I feel like you have kind of carved out arts and culture coverage. I feel like that's something that you do a lot of and do really well. And I guess, were you doing that type of work when you were still down in Florida? Or I guess, have you always had kind of an inclination toward those more, I guess, like human-centered feature-y stories? Or is that something you developed once you got up here?
I have, yeah. When I lived down in Florida, we had a couple of different... We had an art museum in my college town of Pensacola. We also had a like a punk house, which is like kind of, I'm not sure if you're super familiar with punk houses, but it's like
no.
It's like, I'm trying to think of a good way to describe this. It's a like a lot of like musicians come through there, and like a lot of they host like artists in residence and musicians to live there for basically a set amount of time, but they also like promote art and promote like cultural activities and all sorts of things like that. So that was also like a big sort of coverage area that I did was arts. And then yeah, I've always just been sort of interested in those interesting cultural stories and you know, learning about the culture of a community. And I think that's like a great way to learn about the community's culture is by just kind of diving in, and which I felt like I feel like I've done that quite a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, now that you have been up here for a couple of years, you know, what are some of the, I guess, do you have any observations or insights into, you know, our local arts and culture scene?
Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of artists here. That's one thing that kind of took me by surprise. And yeah, just a lot of different artists that focus in all sorts of different mediums. There are a lot of painters up here, quite a lot of photographers. And I mean, it's kind of hard not to be like an artist when you live in such a beautiful place. And yeah, like a lot of the art does focus on Alaska, which I mean, I'm not surprised by that. It's kind of hard to not take inspiration from where you live. There's a lot of artists here, and that kind of surprised me for a small community like ours.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was going to be my next question is, you know, for all the artists listening, why is that a surprise?
Yeah, definitely. Just, I mean, we're combined population of like 15,000 Kenai Soldotna, something like that.
That sounds about right.
And it's just
Central Penn.
Yeah, just like the amount of artists. Like I would expect there to be, you know, more artists in down in Homer or up in Anchorage, but just up here there's so many, and was very surprising when I first moved up here.
Mm-hmm. And you're talking about kind of throwing yourself into the culture of a place to, you know, get familiar with the things and places and people, and I guess, was there at all like a steep learning curve for you, or a learning curve just in general as far as getting up to date on what you need to know to be a successful reporter here in Kenai?
Yeah, I mean, for certain stories, yeah, like just kind of learning the lingo and kind of learning like how to find like certain sources here, like for, I know, like a crime story, for instance, you know, having to learning how to use like court view and something like that. I don't think we had anything like that in Florida. And, you know, sort of learning the lingo and things of that sort, like breakup is like one like word that stood out to me because I had never heard of like a term, that word being used for what it's used for up here, you know, the kind of the change of the seasons and all the snow melting and everything. So I would say that there was just a little bit of a learning curve. Also learning like all the, you know, fish related stuff up here, which
there's a lot of fishing going on.
Yeah. And how, I guess regulated it is and things of that sort. That was one thing that, you know, was sort of a learning curve. Not that I did much fishing related stories back home. But it just seems like a totally different ball game out here.
Mm-hmm. And I feel like something that I associate with your stories, and I maybe, you know, I listen to all of your stories, so maybe I've got a large sample size, but I feel like I associate really rich, like ambient sound and different like sound textures, if that makes sense, mm-hmm. with, you know, your style of storytelling. And I guess I'm wondering if you could maybe talk me through your you know, workflow in terms of, you know, you show up at a place and, you know, you're going to do a story about something that's happening. What's going through your mind as you're gathering all of those different storytelling pieces and then putting them all together?
Yeah. I mean, I always like to set the scene. That's like why I enjoy, you know, incorporating ambi, because it helps, you know, bring the listener in. So that's usually like when I go into like a scene, that's like the first thing I think about is, you know, got to get that ambi, no matter what it could be. It could be like a wave crashing. It could just be someone giving a lecture or something like that. And you know, kind of once I get like a good feel for that, or a good amount of ambi, then I kind of go in and find the key players for whatever story might be, interview them, and yeah. And then, you know, go to the studio and write. So that's sort of my workflow. And then also getting pictures too. I feel like that's something that I maybe haven't been incorporating as much. I mean, I do incorporate like photos into my stories, but maybe not as intensively or as much as I used to back in Florida, because I did like a photo essay series, like a photojournalism essay series back in Florida for our public radio station's website. But here I just have not had the time to to do that. But yeah, I since moving up here, I've definitely focused a lot more on like incorporating ambi rather than photos, which photos are important, but yeah.
So. Mm-hmm. And I guess, you know, this is maybe getting into a little bit of insider baseball just because it's two radio reporters talking to each other. Yeah. But, you know, how are you? Well, you're talking about this idea of scene setting, and you know, you're maybe putting yourself in the mind of, you know, a listener, somebody who's listening to the KDLL evening news. And, you know, how do you know when you've got a good piece of ambi? When do you know, like, oh, that's what I'm going to use to set the scene?
You know, sometimes you just don't know. Sometimes, you know, ambi just isn't that great, and you got to work, you know, you got to work with what you have. But sometimes there's like a juicy little nugget of ambi in there. It could be like, for example, a couple weeks ago I was at Kenai Beach and I got ambi of like someone dip netting and bonking a fish, and I'm like, ooh, that could be good ambi. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes, like, you know, you have to kind of tell like your people that you're or whatever you're covering, you got to tell the people like, hey, can you work with me here? Like, I'm a radio reporter, you know, us radio people, we're always thinking about sound. Can you maybe do this for me to get a little bit of that sound? So yeah, I would say that's kind of how. But sometimes it's just like pure luck, you just happen to be at the right place at the right time and get like the perfect sound bite.
Is there one that's coming to mind as you're talking about the perfect sound bite?
Oh man, I mean, I love a good like setting the scene at the beach and like all the seagulls like squalling and flying around and being loud. Man, that's a good question. I feel like a lot of my stories incorporate ambi, so it's like hard to pinpoint like an exact piece of ambi that really stands out. But I mean, I am sure there are. If I go through like my list of stories, I'm sure there are several that would stand out. Mm-hmm. Are there any that stand out to you that I'm maybe not thinking of off the top of my head?
I mean, this one's super random, and I'm not sure why it stands out, but it's the one that you did about. I believe it was the riverbank restoration on the Kenai River, where people are like scooping things with mm-hmm. shovels and putting them into wheelbarrows. That for some reason sticks out very clearly to me, because it's like, you know, you're describing what's happening, but then also it obviously sounds like that's what's happening, so it's so easy to picture. But that one, you know, maybe not the most exciting ever, yeah. but that's one that stands out.
Yeah, and there's been a couple of times where, like, I don't even really have to explain what's happening, like, in the scene. Like, the Ambi just says it for itself, which is, you know, always super fun.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think something that's interesting, too, about, like, radio journalism in Alaska is the relationship that we have with other public radio networks. And, you know, sometimes, and I'm speaking from my own experience, so you can either agree or disagree if you've experienced this too, but, you know, sometimes folks who are editing stories who live in Anchorage or other parts of the state, you know, want you to kind of place certain things. You know, like if you're writing a story and talking about like Nanilchik, they'll say, you know, Nanilchik between Soldotna and Homer. They're trying to kind of orient specific things for non-Kenai Peninsula listeners. And I guess from a sound perspective, you know, if you're trying to put together like an audio profile of the central Kenai Peninsula, you mentioned seagulls, and I'm wondering if there are other sounds that you kind of find yourself going back to over and over again that contribute to our identity here in Kenai Soldotna area.
Oh man, that's a great question. You got me stumped here.
I mean, I feel like you mentioned the seagulls, which yeah. you know, I love a good seagull sound wave, and I feel like, you know, maybe the river and things like that, but
yeah, like just I enjoy incorporating like kind of sounds of nature in the story, which is kind of hard not to when you live in a place like this. So yeah, like you mentioned, the river, the beach, sometimes even if it's just like the wind like rustling in the trees, like that's always a good kind of a good way to set the scene. I feel like I've had maybe a few stories where I've had like wind rustling. Or, you know, yeah, I mean, fishing, you know, getting some good ambi of a fisherman. I think I talked to a dip netter, the day that dip netting opened, and there was, one dip netter. I was kind of talking to him and I asked him what he's doing, as I'm like recording, he's like, I'm filleting it, I'm gutting it, not filleting it, or something along those lines. Which, you know, something like that is a really juicy little bit of ambi right there. But yeah, I think it really just depends on the story and like what I'm going for. So, but yeah, any really, if I could think of like an exact, like, bit of ambi that reflects the central peninsula, it's gotta be anything natural,
mm-hmm.
Sort of, you know, it has to do with nature.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, you mentioned, or you alluded to earlier, kind of the demand of this particular role, right? You're reporting, you're hosting, you're doing special programs. There's a lot going on there. But I guess, you know, when you look back over, you know, the 2 years of stories that you've done, are there any that stand out or that, you know, you really, you know, stick out in your mind as either being really fun to report or ones that you're really proud of?
Yeah, really fun. it was actually like an early story that I did. I did a story about this guy who happens to be my neighbor, by the way, who collected like this who has this large Coca-Cola memorabilia collection, and
the Coke Man.
The
story.
Coke Man. Yeah, it was. So I think I had been living here for like a week or a week and a half, and I'm like coming home and I'm pulling into my driveway and I hadn't like formally met my next door neighbor yet. So, and I see him out on the porch. So I kind of go over there and introduce myself, and we ended up chatting for like an hour and a half, 2 hours, just about everything. And like, it was kind of getting late and I told him like, hey, I should probably get going. I've got work in the morning. He's like, well, before you go, I want to show you something. And I'm like, okay. He's like, come down to my basement. And I'm like, okay. And he told me what was down there before I went down there. So I'm like, okay, cool, whatever. And I thought, I was expecting it, you know, maybe to be, I don't know, 50 pieces of Coke memorabilia or something like that. When I walked down there, my jaw dropped. he had like 3 rooms of Coke memorabilia, and it's still growing, by the way, because I saw it a couple months ago and it's like grown since I reported on it. But yeah, he has like 5,000 pieces of Coke memorabilia. And my first thing, my first thought was, oh, this has got to be a story. Mm-hmm. And the man himself is a character. He has all these fun little anecdotes about like pieces that he's like collected over the years. Like there was like a collection of like Coca-Cola dominoes, I think. And he was like, you know, I paid $60 for these, but I could have bought them for $12 on eBay. Beer and eBay do not mix well, or
oh my God.
Something like that. And I'm like, oh man, that is a great little you know nugget I could throw in there. So that was one that I thought was really fun. You know, I think I'm most proud of ones where I do incorporate a lot of ambient. I really like, I enjoy a good interactive piece that like really draws people in. So like my dip netting story that I did last month, I was pretty proud of that, because like I talked to like several different people, and I was actually able to, one thing that I think kind of set this one apart was I was able to talk to somebody before and after dip netting. Mm-hmm. And I thought that really kind of tied the story together.
Is that the family with the wagon or the cooler? Mm-hmm. That they're pulling?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And then like another, let's see, like another fun story. I mean, when I covered that white water and bluegrass.
That's exactly the one that came to mind.
Mm-hmm. That stands out as probably being one of my favorite, just because I kind of had an idea what I was getting into going in, but I did not think the story was going to be as fun as it was.
Mm-hmm. it felt like such a good combination of like, you know, you're talking about natural sound, and that's one where you've got a lot of that, you've got a ton of really great characters, and then just kind of an objectively fun and exciting event to cover. I just felt like all of the pieces worked so well with that one.
Yeah, I mean, that just encapsulates, you know, fun, quirky Alaska events, which is another thing that sort of like took me aback when I moved up here, is just the amount of events going on, the amount of interesting and quirky events that the state has.
Mm-hmm. Are there any quirky stories that are coming to mind?
Well, aside from that one, I just like another quirky event, the pumpkin drop. I thought that was kind of interesting. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And like collecting that ambi of like the pumpkin like shattering through the frozen pond, that was like very like I'm in Alaska. It was like kind of just one of those moments that kind of made me think again of where I am, because sometimes it can be, you know, going through the motions and you don't think about like where you're at in the world, and that's like, oh yeah, I'm in Alaska and I'm watching pumpkins fly out of this airplane. Like that was super fun.
I was gonna ask you just to describe for folks who are not familiar with the pumpkin drop what exactly that entails.
Yeah, it's basically like kind of that weird shoulder season between fall and winter. It's, you know, it's cold out, but there's no snow on the ground yet, and it's, I guess, just like kind of a way to get the community together during that kind of weird shoulder season. And it's basically a bunch of like pilots and their single engine airplanes are just flying over this basically this target that they have on the ground, and they're throwing pumpkins out of the plane. And it's around Halloween too, so it kind of makes sense. Mm-hmm. just for funsies, just for the fun of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then I think I cut you off when you were starting to talk about another quirky event.
I'm trying to think of like quirky events that I've covered that I mean, I wouldn't say this is quirky, but like just like the St. Patrick's Day parade. Like I've never been to a St. Patrick's Day parade before.
Okay.
So that was, I don't think of St. Patrick's Day ever, you know, warranting a parade, but you know, that's,
well, don't tell Soldana that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh yeah. Don't, yeah. But I mean, it was a fun one. You know, back where I kind of grew up, I think we only had parades for like Christmas and New Year's and like maybe, Veterans Day or, oh, Mardi Gras too.
Sure.
But you know, I don't think of like some of these holidays that for some people don't give, you know, they don't think too much or too deeply about like St. Patrick's Day or like other holidays. So I thought that was interesting, like a holiday like that. I'm trying to think of like other quirky events that I've covered. Nothing really super quirky comes to mind, but like just some like very Alaska, like centric events. Like I covered a cross country skiing workshop once.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like another one of those moments where I was like, man, I am far from home. Yeah. I am in Alaska covering a cross country ski workshop, and I'm standing in like a foot of snow, and
that one's got like the shuffling of the skis and stuff. Yep. Over at Skyview.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And there's been other stories like that where I have to like take a step back and realize like, oh, I'm in Alaska. There was like another one I did on ice fishing, where like some elementary school kids were learning how to ice fish. And that was, you know, that's always fun. And I always enjoy like going to events like that where I can interview kids, because they always have fun things to say.
See, I've got the opposite problem where I think I'm always like super scared to talk to kids or stick a microphone in their face, but I feel like that's a good skill to have.
Yeah, definitely.
So, I mean, we're talking about all of these, you know, different elements that go into making a good radio story, you know, ambi and good characters and things like that. And you mentioned kind of the wide freedom that you've got here at KDLL to pitch and report stories. I guess, what is your process for determining whether a story is worth your time? You know, we're kind of a small, we're a small newsroom. I think that's accurate to say. You know, our resources are spread, I feel like, pretty thin. You know, how do you decide whether something is worth your attention and some coverage?
Yeah, I mean, if it, you know, is general interest or interest to like the public, I think that warrants a story in and of itself. You know, I have a lot of people pitch stories to me, and yeah, sometimes I'm like, oh yeah, that's interesting, I'll look into that. And it turns out that, you know, maybe it's a story worth covering. And then there's other stories that I'm like, no, that is not worth my time. But yeah, just like, I feel like any story that, and you know, I tend to gravitate more towards features, so that could be a bit of a challenge in determining what's worth covering and what isn't. Yeah, I guess like how I determine like what stories are worth covering in terms of like feature stories. Yeah, if it has like a general interest to the community, I think those are interesting. Those are like worth reporting on. Yeah, so I guess when it comes to like my sort of you know, focus on reporting, I tend to gravitate more towards features. And so I think stories that are worth covering are ones that have sort of like a general interest to the community. And I like to kind of show the lighter side of communities. So, you know, fun events like that kind of, I think, you know, would the audience like this, you know, if to kind of take a break from sometimes what can be a heavy news cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Those are, I try to focus on those. Or like stories that maybe are lighter, but tie into like a more, you know, a bigger issue. Like for example, there's one that I could think of, the Art Center. They had like I think it was the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District had like their annual art exhibit there. And I sort of tied it into like, you know, the budget deficit with the school district. So yeah, I guess those are kind of how I determine like what stories I want to cover and which ones I don't. Just like if it has a general interest and if I could tie it to like a larger issue, which sometimes can be difficult, but other times it comes kind of naturally.
Mm-hmm. Is that process at all different for, you know, like with KDLL, we've got our kind of unique economics and weekly Kenai conversation program. Mm-hmm. I guess, is that pitching process or idea process different for those two programs?
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, some weeks, some weeks I'm like scrambling to find an econ or a convo.
Same.
Yeah, it's not always easy. But like, I feel like I can find, you know, I could tie the economy to just about anything here, because we are such a small community. That makes it kind of a little bit easier. So even if it's like, you know, sometimes they're super easy, like, you know, a new store is opening or something.
Yeah,
like that.
I feel like you really, again, we're talking about just like areas that you've carved out and made kind of your own. I feel like business features and talking to local business owners is something that you do really well and have done a lot of while you're here.
Yeah, and I enjoy those too, just because, like, you know, get to see a new business and, you know, see what they're all about, and so those are always fun. But, you know, sometimes you know, I could tie in the, you know, econ focus to something more featurey. Like, I think a few weeks back I did one on just like a local project that is you know, testing water for salmon habitat. And, you know, that has an economic you know, I could put an economic spin on that, because, you know, salmon are very, very tied to our economy. And so, yeah, sometimes you have to kind of think outside the box like that, for like an economic focused like story.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, how about convo, you know, finding something to talk about for an hour.
Yeah. That arguably convo is probably the most difficult, one of the most difficult parts of the job for me. 'Cause, you know, sometimes it's really hard to find, you know, people to talk for an hour. So, you know, sometimes I think, you know, think about the time of year, and, you know, if there's, you know, something, an event going on that time of year, or like just, you know, the season for something, I'll think about that. Sometimes I'll look to see if there's like an author that has released a book or something like that. Or like, you know, just chatting with someone who's very knowledgeable on a certain topic can be very interesting. Like, I chatted with a couple of gentlemen a couple of weeks ago that, you know a lot about Alaska place names, and I'm like, oh, that's kind of an interesting convo. So yeah, it can be challenging sometimes. And also, like, sometimes it could be challenging interviewing people who, you know, don't like to be behind the microphone.
Sure.
There's been one or two occasions where I've really, really had to draw, like, pull questions out of nowhere, basically. And I've learned that athletes are very short with their responses, which makes it difficult when you're trying to fill an hour convo. That was one of my first convos. I ran through my, like, kind of general questions that I had in my head in like 20 minutes.
All right. And so, you're like, what are we going to do for the other 40?
Yep. So I was like asking them, like, where are you from? Like, tell me about your family.
Yeah.
Like, things like that. But, yeah, convo's an interesting one. It can be challenging sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Are there, I know we've got candidate forums coming up. Are you doing any more convos before you head out?
I have one more, next week, and then, yeah, I think that's it.
You already know what you're doing for that one, or?
Yeah, the Harbor Safety Committee, they're looking to kind of spread the word about what they're about, so I'm going to do a convo on that.
Are there any, I guess, you know, we're just talking about how kind of difficult a convo is to manage logistically, but are there any that you always wanted to do that maybe you weren't able to make happen, you know, while you were here?
Let me think about that.
Or I guess, do you have a dream convo guest?
I mean, someone famous would be cool.
Sure.
dream convo guest. That's a good one. You know, I tend to gravitate towards like artists and more interesting people. So I think maybe if like Ray Troll or someone were in the area, that would be a super interesting one. Or like, you know, maybe a notable musician coming to the area. You know, Weird Al was in town not too long ago. That would be a fun one. And like in terms of like ones that I was really hoping to do, you know, nothing is coming to mind at the moment. But you know, maybe if you could circle back, I could probably come up with a good one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, do you know if, you know, your new gig involves any, like, special programs like that, or is it going to be strictly news reporting?
No, it's going to be strictly news reporting with some hosting, like, of, I think they have, like, a mid-afternoon newscast.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess just sticking with this idea of, you know, we're talking about stories that, you know, you like to do, that you have done, and you're working on a project right now. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so fingers crossed I can get it to the finish line before my last day. But yeah, I'm working on a mini series about sort of housing here on the Kenai Peninsula, or the lack thereof of available housing. So it's going to like more so focus on what the borough and like local cities are doing to sort of increase access to not just available housing, but affordable housing. And then also I'm hoping to tie in like some local organizations. Like I know Rural Cap's doing something. There's another organization based in Homer that's trying to increase like access to affordable housing. So that's sort of what I'm hoping to do. I was hoping to make it a longer series, but it's kind of a challenge, you know, working on a series while also being like having stories almost daily, and then also juggling convo, and then also trying not to go over hours, mm-hmm. trying to get that work-life balance. But yeah, the plan is to hopefully have that all put together next week.
And I guess how did you decide this was, one, a project that you wanted to do, and then two, warranted a series approach versus, you know, a longer single story?
Yeah, it was, you know, it's something that I've noticed, and, you know, one thread that I do tend to, I plan to pull on this is like, you know, the amount of, the amount of like rentals, like short-term rentals here in the mm-hmm. area. I know other communities have like similar issues, but I feel like here on the peninsula it's much more pronounced. It's like everywhere. I've known people that have, you know, moved up here and they couldn't find housing for several days. And I had one friend in particular that I can think of. He was living in his car for like a couple of days until he secured housing up here. So that kind of made me interested in sort of diving into this a little bit more. And then I've, you know, also had friends just tell me about their gripes with finding housing here. Not everyone, maybe is as lucky in finding housing, just because there's a lack of it, mm-hmm. a lack of availability and affordability. So I guess that sort of made me interested in doing a story about this. And, you know, it's an issue that affects a lot of communities here here in the country. But I think it's really prominent here on the Kenai Peninsula. And I think that sort of warranted a series of stories. And like you mentioned, I could have just done one story, but it's a very broad issue that covers a lot of facets. And there's a lot of threads to pull. And I could easily probably make it a, you know, six story series, but just for the sake of time, I'm going to try to get it to three. But yeah, that's sort of why I was interested in it. It's something that's always interested me. So, mm-hmm.
And are the stories grouped around particular themes, or how are you organizing the different parts you're putting together?
So the first story will just sort of highlight the issue. Like, you know, the peninsula is still growing in population, maybe not as much as it once was, but it is still growing. And then, you know, sort of highlighting the issue that housing is not able to keep pace with the growing population here. And then I think story two will focus on how, like, local governments like the borough, the city, are trying to expand access to available housing, and pull on a couple threads there and on what they've already done. And then the third story will focus on how these local governments and also local organizations are like looking to expand access to affordable, you know, housing. So that's kind of what I'm thinking, and that could change. I have a meeting with one of our Alaska Public Media Network editors to kind of flesh out some other maybe ideas that I'm not thinking of offhand. But yeah, I think that's going to be sort of the general flow, maybe 5-minute story for each. So,
mm-hmm. And then, you know, kind of last question before we shift to your new role,
yeah.
And, you know, shift our eyes southward to Ketchikan. You know, when you think about the news landscape here on the Kenai Peninsula, I guess, are there any areas, you know, I asked you any convos that any guests you would have liked to have talked to. Are there any stories that you feel like you wish you could have gotten to, or that you've had written down, or, and then kind of related to that, any areas, coverage areas that you think are maybe going underrepresented or overrepresented?
And in terms of like stories I wish I had done or just had the time to do, there's, you know, with all the funding cuts that are sort of happening on the federal level, there's one that I was thinking about doing in terms of like beluga monitoring here on the peninsula. And I know like NOAA sort of spearheads that. And I'm curious, like, I know it's a lot of volunteer run, but I'm curious, like, how that might impact their sort of research into beluga monitoring and how that could impact like just the habitat for belugas in general. So that was like, that's one that I could think of offhand that I wish I had like the time to do. I've got a whole list of story ideas written down. And in terms of like coverage areas that I think are underrepresented, I think I have expanded sort of the arts and cultural reporting. I mean, I think we do a pretty good job of trying to cover all the bases. There's always more to be said with fishing. So maybe if I had more time, and that's like an area of reporting that I've sort of grown to enjoy more than I thought I would is fishing. So like if I had more time, if I were here for longer, I'd maybe start gravitating more towards fishing related stories. That's something that, that's interested me. And I think we do a good job of covering it, but you know, there's always more to be said.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, looking now to Ketchikan, you know, what can you, I've never been to Ketchikan. I'm sure there are some listeners who have, you know, what has the research process looked like into that community? You know, I guess, what are you expecting to, you know, once you hit the ground there?
I haven't had too much time to actually like sit down and like research potential story ideas there. But my basic surface level research, and this tells you like how fresh this is, like accepting this job. It's basically just, you know, kind of looking at Google Maps and seeing like the layout of the city and, you know, what all is there and what all it has to offer. And then also sort of, you know, looking at, like, you know, the neighboring islands that I'll be covering, which will be super interesting. And I'm super excited about because I'll have the chance to occasionally go over to, Prince of Wales Island, you know, via ferry and cover like some of their communities there. Cause there's several like small communities. And then there's another island, I believe it's an island, with the city of Metlakatla, which has like a pretty like prominent native community, and those I'm sure there are plenty of stories there that would be interesting to cover. I guess that's sort of in my surface level research. Also looking for housing,
sure.
Which is kind of funny because I'm working on a series about housing, and the availability there is probably even less than it is here because it's such a small community and it's, you know, built kind of on a mountain. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, well, and I know like you and I have talked just kind of anecdotally about, you know, you mentioned getting into skiing while you were up here, you know, for your personal life or, you know, own hobbies, what are some of the, how are those going to change with the, you know, completely different climate and part of the state?
I'm gonna have to focus more on water activities. You know, most of my activities that I've taken up here have been sort of land-based. Like I enjoy the water, but I'm gonna have to learn to really enjoy it down there. I might buy like a skiff or something like that,
because okay.
from what I hear, you can like really explore more of the island or more of the area if you have a boat.
Sure.
Because there's like 30 miles of highway north to south, so yeah, just looking to do, I guess, more water-based activities. You know, I am scuba certified, so that's something I like might pick back up. I haven't done that since I lived in Florida. I hear snorkeling is big there too, and like the waters there are like pretty clear, which
okay.
would make like fun snorkeling. And then, yeah, I'm going to have to get another raincoat,
sure.
which I don't know how I'm going to deal with that. All the rain, you know, I think I adjusted up here pretty fine with the snow in the winter, but I mean, this is like one of the rainiest, if not the rainiest city in the country. So
okay.
that'll definitely be an adjustment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, what are some of the, I don't want to, you know, linger on nostalgia necessarily, but what are some of the places or things that you're gonna miss about this place?
Oh man, the snow probably. Like Ketchikan does get snow, but it's more of like a wet snow, like it doesn't stick, and it's not the Alaska winter that it's not going to be the Alaska winters that I've sort of grown to know. So I'm definitely going to miss the snow and anything really affiliated with it. So like I've picked up on skiing since I moved up here, and this past winter, even though it was not like great in terms of skiing, I still was out there. I probably skied 5 or 6 times this winter, downhill skied, which, I love. It's a rush. And then yeah, cross country skiing, I'm going to miss out on that too. I am going to bring my snowshoes down there because like I've heard like if you get higher in elevation, there's more snow up there. So there's some like, you know, snowshoeing activities up there. And then, yeah, I guess just sort of the interesting, quirky, or like just unique community events that we have here in on the peninsula and just throughout South Central. That's, I'm going to miss that, which I hear Ketchikan has some of those events to a degree, but like, you know, like a Whitewater and Bluegrass Music Festival, mm-hmm. like I'd never heard of that. And like, you know, going to the Music and Hope on Friday and Saturday nights, you know, those are things I'm going to miss. And also, I guess just, the mountains, you know, Ketchikan does have mountains, but they're more, I guess more tree-based mountains, okay. for lack of a better word.
Tree-based mountains.
I
know what you're saying.
More deciduous, I think, is the word I was looking for.
Okay.
Whereas, you know, the mountains here, I think of like jagged mountain peaks. Mm-hmm. Whereas down there, they're more just covered in trees. So I think I'm going to definitely miss that too. And, you know, it's not like I'm not going to be back to mm-hmm. see that. So.
Yeah. I mean, is there anything, I know you're kind of checking things off of, you know, what you'd like to do while you're still here on the, in South Central, what all is on that list before you head south?
Oh man, I feel like I've done so much this summer. I've pretty much gotten there, like checked most of the things off the list, but me and a friend are planning a trip to Prudhoe Bay.
Okay. Yeah.
He lives in Fairbanks, so I'm going to meet him up there, and then we're going to take his car, because I don't trust my car on the Dalton Highway. Mm-hmm. We're going to take his car up there, and I think we're going to take 4 days, so for me it'll be 6 days, because I have to drive there and back from Fairbanks. So that's like kind of just like a bucket list thing for me.
Me too.
Just because, like, you know, it's the most north that you can drive on the road system in, I believe, in North America, if I'm not mistaken, or at least in the country. So the plan is to drive up there and to hop in the Arctic Ocean.
Okay.
Just to say that I've done it. Mm-hmm. And there's like a couple of hikes here and there. There's like one in Anchorage I kind of want to do. I still haven't been to the Alaska Wildlife Conservation Center, which, yeah,
no, need to do that immediately.
I drive by it all the time, and I'm like, one day I will stop there, so I need to do that. Yeah, I mean, this summer has just been sort of crossing off things off my summer bucket list, because I kind of had a feeling this was going to be my last, like, summer in South Central, so I've been busy.
Mm-hmm. Well, and, you know, next Friday, I believe that's your official last day with KDLL?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So I guess, you know, coverage-wise, work-wise, do you have any, I know you're working on this series. Are there any other stories you're hoping to get out before you, you know, say farewell, you know, permanently? I don't want to say permanently, but formally, maybe?
There's a couple that I'm working on. There's, like, a couple of projects that are related to salmon habitat. Two completely different projects that I intend to do stories on. One has to do with beaver dam restoration and like how that's you know, beneficial to salmon habitat. So I drove down to like kind of south of Nanilchik, out in the middle of nowhere, basically down this like 20-mile dirt road, and they're like, the group of scientists are like building sort of artificial beaver dams, which you know, again, helps salmon habitat. And I'm hoping to do like a econ this week on like how that's beneficial to the economy.
Okay.
And then there's another one, kind of just like an update on, there's a salmon habitat restoration project down in Hope on the Resurrection Creek. I know Riley did a story on it a couple of years ago, and I believe Sabine did it another story on a couple of years back, but
passing it from KDLL reporter.
Yeah, they've made significant strides in the last couple of years on that project, to a point where it's not quite complete, but it's very close to being complete. And so I'll have a story on that. You know, there's one that you sort of passed off to me, and I keep dropping the ball on this one, but the Cooper Landing, or is it Kenai Lake Lodge in Cooper Landing,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
That burned down a couple of months ago. So I've already chatted with like a historian who has a lot of information about this. I just need to sit down and write the story.
Sure.
So I'm hoping to get that out. You know, I'm trying not to take too many other stories right now, just so I don't overwhelm myself and have more time to focus on what I want to get done before then. Cause you know, I'm also, packing and, you know, getting the move, making, you know, selling things and stuff like that, which is time consuming. And people also like want to see me before I leave, which has also sort of been time consuming. So it's been a very, very busy, couple weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, now that you're, you know, again, you can kind of look back on these previous 2 years with the benefit of retrospect and hindsight. You know, if you what's going through your mind as you reflect on your time here at KDLL and prepare to, you know, start this brand new adventure?
It's kind of bittersweet leaving, because I really love the area. Like it's a great place to be. But at the same time, you know, I am excited for this new adventure. I think just kind of as a whole, I'm just very grateful to have even been given the opportunity to like come up here and report, and live up here for 2 years of my life. It's been like incredibly transformative. I've learned a lot, not only about like, you know, the sort of, workflow of a news reporter and like how to improve my craft, but also just, I feel like I've grown as a person up here. And so, yeah, I'm just incredibly thankful to even be given the opportunity to come up here. Cause I think about like how few, opportunities people have to make such a big change, for a lot of people like in life, like this was truly a once in a lifetime opportunity coming up here. And it was very hard to turn down.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just so grateful for even the chance to come up here and for the community to, you know, welcoming me and kind of accepting me as their own. So
mm-hmm.
From Floridian to Alaskan.
Yeah. Well, and at the risk of, you know, spoiling potential, I know you've talked about wanting to host on your mm-hmm. official last day. Are you planning any, you know, KDLL send-offs for yourself or, you know, anything you want to do here before you head out?
I mean, I'll probably have like a going away, like party at my house or something like that. Yeah, my last newscast, I'm probably just gonna be kind of a little bit mushy, like, thanks for, you know, the past 2 years, it's been an honor, you know, that sort of thing. And just for people who aren't listening, to let them know that, you know, this is also like my last day, and I'm moving on to Ketchikan. Yeah, I mean, pretty low key. I'm not super big on making a big deal out of, you know, a life event like this. So just kind of going to keep it low key and celebrate with keep a low key celebration.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Well, I'm going to, you know, throw the floor to you for any final thoughts, last words. Otherwise, you know, we're at the end of the hour, so we can wrap things up.
Yeah. I don't really have too much else to say. You know, it's been a great 2 years. And like I said a couple of minutes ago, I'm just, you know, incredibly thankful to even have been given the opportunity to come up here. It's truly been a very transformative time in my life, you know, in finding myself and in finding, you know, bettering my craft as a news reporter, and also just having been given the experience of living up here is something truly, truly unique, especially coming from, you know, Florida. But yeah, just I guess, you know, keep supporting KDLL, keep supporting public radio. You know, it's incredibly important at this time, you know, with everything that's sort of going on with, you know, federal funding and things of that sort. And yeah, just, I guess, fight the good fight. That's really all I have to say. So,
all right.
Yeah.
Well, That'll be all for this week's episode of the Kenai Conversation. Hunter, I mean, I really just can't thank you enough for sitting down and chatting, and it's just been awesome to work with you. And of course, you know, I feel like I can speak for myself and our listeners in saying that, you know, we want all the best for you in this next chapter. And of course, I look forward to running your stories and, you know, on our local newscast when applicable. But yeah. You can hear the Kenai Conversation every week on Wednesdays at 10 a.m. and Saturdays at 5 p.m. here on KDLL. You can also find it on our website at kdll.org. I'm Ashlyn O'Hara. Thanks for listening.